it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Top Order Podcast. Heaps going on in the world of cricket again this week. Every week we go through our run sheet and there's heaps and heaps of cricket going on across the world. We're going to talk Big Bash, Super Smash. We're going to talk Test Match cricket at the Manuka Oval. We're going to talk about the ICC Under-19 World Cup and a whole host more here on the Top Order Podcast. Stay tuned. Well, Bordy, we've got to start, I think, with the Women's Ashes. We have just driven up to the podcast and following this on the internet on the way up, an absolutely barnstorming finish to this Test match. England 9 down, set a chase on the final day of the 4-day test in Canberra. What are your thoughts? And we're literally 20 minutes after this game's finished, right?
Yeah, well, what an incredible finish from a game that was sort of petering out into nowhere. And 2 or 3 hours ago, we were talking and we were saying Australia should just bat and bat and bat and let the game meander into a draw, shake hands, have a beer and, you know, move on to the one dayers. But Australia set a declaration for England, a brilliant batting performance for the England girls to get them close. And then Australia took 5 wickets in the space of a couple of overs to have England 9 down with 2 overs to go. And then England were able to, with Sophie Eccleston and Kate Cross, bat out for a draw in those last 12 balls. So what could have meandered into a pretty, you know, damp squib of a finish ended up becoming an incredibly exciting test match, maybe the best of the summer.
I love it when they set targets like that. What did you make of that declaration? You happy with the amount of time, amount of runs that were left?
Look, I probably would have just continued to bat. I probably wouldn't have declared and made England either chase down a score that had me bowled out or just batted and until the end of the game. But Australia have set a declaration that England went after and felt that they could get. And if it finishes 9 down and Australia were a chance to take the last wicket, then I think you have to say that the declaration was just about spot on.
Binksy, you must be pretty stoked from an English point of view. I think that they went for it because I know we've criticised Joe Root certainly a lot for his the men's side not going for targets over the past 12 months. Good on the women's side for actually having a real crack at that.
Yeah, look, I was listening to the commentary and I think it was Brad Hodge was on the commentary for, is it Fox Sports, I think, covering it in Australia. And he was kind of goading Australia to make a declaration from England being in a position where he was actually suggesting that Australia pull the pin and leave them around about 4 and over to chase. They've ended up setting over 5 and over to chase and they've nearly got there.
Yeah.
The question I would ask though is really just the girls don't play that much test cricket. So whether or not they actually have actually said, you know, we actually want a game of this. You know, we would rather win a test match and put that potential loss on the line in order to have a chance of winning a test match rather than just playing safe and going for the draw. But in the context of the series, pretty big decision. Mm-hmm. When you think about the fact that this test match obviously holds more points than the one dayers and the T20s, and Australia going into a situation where if they'd have just carried on batting for their next 3 wickets, England would have needed to win all three of the ODIs in order to have a sniff of winning this multi-format series. So, look, good on Australia for setting up a game of cricket. But look, I think credit goes to England for actually having a crack at the runs. And I've got to say that I thought Heather Knight batted fantastically in both innings. Obviously a big 168, I think, in the first innings, and then got 40-odd in the second innings as well. So, yeah, look, really good advert for the game and really exciting to watch as well.
So where, as an Australian supporter, where do you sit on that result? I know you wanted Australia to probably bat through and hold that dominance, but where do you sit after this game?
Oh, look, I think it was a fantastic game of cricket and a massive, massive win for women's cricket in terms of being an entertainment product. You know, I was following the ESPN Cricket Info commentary on the way through, and there were people like flooding in on the commentary feed to say, this has been an incredible test match. I'm tuning in. I'm so glad to see, you know, women's cricket being an entertaining product. And I think that's the best outcome from a holistic cricket point of view. I think it was great that Australia declared and tried to set up a win in a test match rather than going for the draw. And, you know, nine down, we could have had the win. You know, a little bit of luck goes your way and you might pick up a wicket late in the day and get that win. But I think it's fantastic outcome overall for the game of cricket.
Can I just ask, what is the reason for the women's games being 4-day tests? Like, it just doesn't really seem like any point. Why couldn't they have just played a 5-day game? You could say, well, I don't actually know at all if women's games have finished in the past in 4 days, and that's kind of why they do it. But it just seems pointless that they had to set up a game instead of actually just play it out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they do play 100 overs in a day, so they play 400 overs of cricket instead of 450 in the normal sort of 5-day, 90-over-a-day test. So they play almost as much in terms of, you know, number of overs bowled as the men do, but obviously in terms of a shortened time frame, weather has more of an impact. So you lose two or 3 hours.
And
or
there
lose
was a bit of weather in this game as well.
Absolutely. And I think that has been the criticism of women's test cricket in the past, is there has been a fair amount of draw cricket. But that's largely, I think, because games are played over 3 or 4 days. I think there'd be a lot more result-oriented cricket if you played over 5 days, or at least had a reserve day if you had a significant amount of time lost to rain. But, I mean, as it stands, this is a test match that going into the final 3 overs, you could have had any one of the 4 possible outcomes. So, you know, this is probably not the best game to look at in terms of asking that question.
Yeah, look, I guess it's easy to Monday morning quarterback this, but it is a short series if you think about it. 3 games of T20, 3 ODIs, and just a single test match. An extra day so that, you know, you have got that ability to have a result in a test match, particularly when the result of the test match is so important in the context of this series. If either side wins a test match, then, you know, they really are in the pound seats or the $3 seats, or what is it? $2.50 seats. I don't know, with inflation, but you look definitely in the pound seats for that contest. But look, really good series and shaping up that, you know, those 1 days. If we don't get the weather that we had in Adelaide, like how disappointing is it to have 2 days rain in bloody Adelaide, Baldy?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, that's curtailed all of the T20s that a lot of people would have wanted to get along to and whatnot as well. And hopefully we get 3 good days of cricket in the 1 days. And England will now, having had that draw at Manuka Oval, will need to win all 3, I think, to take the series off Australia now. Yeah,
bloody Australian weather. Let's move on to more potential for Australian weather. We didn't have it, obviously, at the... Is it the Marvel Stadium, the Dockland Stadium?
Yes.
I never remember which one it is.
Yes, that's the undercover stadium in Melbourne that
it is
associated
the one
with
Spider-Man the, might come in on yep, that. Yeah, okay. So that was the final of the Big Bash. So you heard it here first that the Sydney Sixers beat the Adelaide Strikers for the right to lose to Perth Scorchers in the final. Baldy, we finally got a bloody prediction right.
We did, and it took a breaking of a three-peat to resurrect the Perth Scorchers' dominance over the Big Bash. I mean, they're the most successful team now by far. I think this is their 4th title, and they've just got, you know, class top to bottom. Marsh, Munro. Actually, to be fair, Inglis, none of them did anything in the final. But
I was
going to
say, that's not really the highlights really of the final.
Of the actual final itself. And I mean, Perth Scorchers were in big trouble. 4 for 40, batting first at the Marvel Stadium. And then it was Ashton Turner and Laurie Evans stole the show with a tremendous partnership to put them back on track and give them 171 for 6.
Was the big thing for me, but that there's actually just no fear in T20 cricket now. Like, they were, I think they were 25 for 4, actually. And they were in all sorts of trouble. And you think back to well, I don't know, even thinking myself, I was like, okay, they'll just consolidate for a few overs here. No, they just kept going and they put on 110 overs and suddenly they're in a great position and you know, obviously ended up winning by a long way, but just that's what struck me the most. There's just no fear at all in T20 cricket.
Yeah, I'll probably say it a slightly different way. They didn't consolidate in terms of necessarily, you know, patting it around, but they did, Ashton Turner and Laurie Evans did play in a more circumspect fashion for a period of time. They both were actually well under 100 from a strike rate perspective for a decent period of time and then hit the afterburners to get the Perth Scorchers to that total. Look, I'm just going to take what little solace I can from what has been a horrible Australian summer. I was listening to the commentary and to be honest, I was a little bit pissed off that the big bash cheerleading crew of, you know, Gilchrist and Ponting and Mark Howard and whoever was else in the commentary box were going on about how good Ashton Turner was. Laurie Evans at the other end, Englishman, has played county cricket for Surrey, Sussex and Warwickshire. Stole the show, really, striking at 185, is 76 off 41 balls. Look, with a broken foot as well. Let's really talk about this. He had an injection before the game. He had one at halfway. So look, you know, this has got to, you know, actually probably just turn that Ashes deficit round to 4-1, hasn't it?
Well, if you say so, Adam. I mean, it was a great performance from Perth Scorchers on both sides, bat and ball. Jai Richardson, 2 for 20. Berendorf, 1 for... I mean, all these guys were going at sixes and under. Hatsoglu, Ashton Agar and Andrew Tai ended up with 3 wickets, all going for under 6 runs and over. In fact, none of the Perth Scorchers bowlers went for more than 6.25. So, you know, great performance on both sides of the ball, and it just ended up proving too much for a sixes side that did really well to get into the final.
Let's just talk about, I guess, the Sixers' plight, really, that, you know, ravaged by injury throughout the course of the tournament. I know we talked on the last podcast about Steve Smith's not being allowed to play. We've got to talk about that. Look, it in my view, it was a semi-final. It was probably called something like the Dominator or the Chickenator or something like that. I don't know. But Jay Lenton coming in essentially to pinch run for Jordan Silk in that semi-final. Lot of flare-up on Twitter and social media about that. What do we actually think about that? I know Raj has got one side of the coin.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna die on the hill for it. I don't think it was very sporting in the context. He came in. You said he was in there for 4 balls. I think we were talking about this earlier, Baldy.
Yep.
Faced one of them and was off strike for the others. But I don't think that you should be able to bring somebody in just to run at the end. I think if they nominated him to bat, knowing that he was injured previous to going into batting, I think he got injured in the field when they were fielding.
That's my understanding. Yeah, he did a hammy in the field.
You know, you have to take the good with the bad there. But go ahead, Bingsy. Put me on my ass.
Oh, look, I'm not going to put you on your ass necessarily, but I think what we're talking about is, you know, if a batsman is ill or injured, they're considered retired, not out, and may be able to return at the end of the innings if they wish to do so. And a batsman can also be retired out as well at any point during the course of the innings. We see that a lot in the warm-up games that are given first-class status in the lead-up to test matches, for example, where someone's got, you know, 80-odd, they're feeling pretty good, Nick, and they say, yeah, come in and have a crack.
I think there's a bit more on this game than in those warm-up games.
There is a little bit more on it, but it's the laws of cricket that we're talking about here. I don't think the spirit's been fractured in my particular view. That, you know, they've sent Jordan Silk out there because they thought he could clear the rope in that situation. And then they've got to the stage where they needed 2 off the final ball of the game. And they've got a guy with a torn hamstring and they've sent a guy without a torn hamstring in to run for him. Happens all the time in baseball. You know, the concept of a pinch runner. And for me, I think it's bloody good coaching to actually have said, you know what, I think that this guy can clear the fence. We'll let him try and do that on one leg. When he's not been able to do it, they've sent someone in that can run for him. I guess the only fly in the ointment, which I'm sure Raj would have pointed out, is that Jordan Silk did run a 2 in his innings as well. So, a little bit of a difficult situation. In a test match, I'd have probably been throwing shit at the screen. but I think in this Mickey Mouse T20, it's all right, isn't it?
What about, you said baseball just there before. So same kind of scenario, last ball or last couple of balls, they substitute out the player who's striking the ball for a left-hander or a right-hander or something because there's just a shorter boundary on the other side. Are you comfortable with that?
Absolutely.
I don't. This isn't baseball, fellas. We're talking, this is cricket. You know, that's not how the game has traditionally been played. I know the game is different now, but I don't know. Part of me is a bit romantic and likes to see those sort of traditions held. If he was fit enough to go in when they made that decision, I think he was fit enough to finish the game.
And that's the real challenge, isn't it? Is that he wasn't injured while batting. He was injured before he batted, and Sydney have made a tactical judgment to go, okay, we're going to have him heading towards the short boundary. We're going to take a punt that he's going to be able to do that for us. So they've kind of got a bob each way, if you like. And I can understand the people who are not upset about it, but who are saying, well, he shouldn't be able to retire hurt if they've sent him out to bat and they knew he was injured to begin with. You know, if he had come back for a second and done his hamstring again and then couldn't continue, then that might be a slightly different story from a spirit of cricket point of view.
It's funny, right? What if he just stood in the middle of the pitch? They probably would have been more sporting letting himself getting run out rather than getting retired.
But well, then they would have needed three to win instead of two, exactly. And that would have been a little bit harder. Look,
And this is the beautiful thing about cricket, right? We talked about this, what, two or three podcasts ago. We were talking about whether a guy that can bowl left arm and right arm should be able to run up and bowl with either arm without telling the umpire, because a batsman's allowed to switch around and play the reverse hit if he wants. So, look, I think we're talking about similar things here. It is a matchup conversation. It is a tactical conversation. Look, whichever side of the coin you come down on, fair enough. But look, I thought it was fantastic coaching from the Sixers coaching staff there to get someone in that's going to be able to get the result that they needed. What would we have said if the bowler had pulled up with a hammy because it was a matchup situation? Like, I don't know. It is an interesting debate, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And look, I'm sure that we'll see more of now that we've seen an instance of this. Very, very often, Mark Waugh, who I don't particularly like on commentary, is a massive advocate of bringing someone in when they can't time it. He said, yeah, you bring him off because he's shit. Like, that's genuine. That's genuinely what he's saying. So, look, maybe we will see pinch batters coming in. But, yeah, Perth Scorchers dominance continues. Bordy, can you see them being big favourites for Big Bash 12 if it takes place in this COVID-ravaged world?
All other things being equal, I think absolutely. I mean, you do also have to remember that I don't think they played a game in Perth since the middle of December. They played
Which is fantastic, isn't it?
Played most of their games away in Sydney or Melbourne. So a tremendous performance from them to be on the road for, well, to be fair, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, which is less than the Warriors spend on the road, obviously. But they've done a really, really good job. They'll have most of their guys back. Maybe Colin Munro retires, perhaps. But, I mean, he's, what, 35, 36? He'll probably keep going until he's in his late 30s. They'll have most of their guys back. And you know, guys like Joe Richardson and players like that, you know, they're going to just get better and better and better, aren't they?
So your question there about next year, I guess I want to kind of open that up to all of you here and just ask a question around, do we think that the BBL as a format has gotten a little bit tired? Maybe it was a bit more lackluster this time around. They tried, you know, changing the rules and things last season, adding stuff in. What do you guys make of BBL as a tournament?
Well, I think the fact that they've been changing rules and introducing X factors and power surges and all sorts of, you know, electrical terms, I'm sure they're going to have a circuit breaker in there at some point, tells me that the format is getting a little bit tired and they're having to do things to try and, you know, keep it fresh and have that little bit of novelty factor. My view would be less is more. I think they're playing too many games. If they're playing, I think, 14 round robin games, something like that, everyone plays each other twice.
Up from 10 in the previous tournament.
Yeah, so I think that's too much. That's too much cricket. I think it would be a less is more type of situation. You know, that does introduce inequity in the draw, and I know that can cause some ructions and stuff, but if you played it in a conference system and you had two conferences of four and you played everyone in your own conference twice, that's six games, and then you had another four games against the other conference, that's 10, and then you go into a semi-final and final situation. Clearly what they're trying to do is create more money by having more cricket, and I think that's going to wear on fans at some point and there's going to be some kind of fatigue.
Yeah, look, the only thing I think I'd add is obviously we've had a season where crowds haven't really been able to get into the stadium. So I think if we go back to the previous iterations of Big Bash, we've seen actually, I believe, a decline in the, you know, public bums on seats at games over the course of the last couple of years, notwithstanding this COVID year. So I think I've said to you guys, you know, you can shear a sheep many times, you can only skin it once. And I wonder whether or not the BBL are getting to the stage where they are really, you know, taking advantage of the public in that respect. What's been really good, I think, is that you've got that ability to switch over from the Test cricket and get into the Big Bash. That's really helped in terms of the marketing of the game. Yep. But I think they've missed a few tricks this year. the biggest one for me is not letting those test players, particularly Steve Smith, back into the tournament. Mm-hmm. At the end, I think that that would have raised the profile of the tournament again. But look, I'd be an advocate of a shorter, sharper tournament. And we've seen players like Andre Russell only come in for three or four games rather than maybe playing the whole of that tournament. Yep. So I think you've got to really attract those big name players to have that, that sort of tournament.
Yeah, I think I've been thinking about it a little bit, actually, the BBL and how they could enhance it. And what I keep coming back to is that 2020 cricket especially is all about the brands of the players that are playing in the league. Imagine if next year Kevin Peterson came back and played for
he's
one of the
teams.
He's
in good nick, mate, in this world shit.
The Legend of League whatever it was called. But my point is that bring back some of those players, or maybe, you know, Mihaela J. Wardner. I don't know if you're signalling to me or
no,
what.
I'm just scratching my arm. Sorry, mate. Yeah,
bring back some of those sort of big names who have only just gotten out of the game. I bet you Shane Warne could still chuck it down pretty good.
If he listens to him in the comm box, he definitely could, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's probably where they need to look at, opening it up to more international players maybe. Mm. How many they have at the moment? Two in a side?
I think it might have been two, maybe three. But, I mean, the challenge, of course, is getting guys down through quarantine and into Australia in the last 2 years. I think previous to that, they've had some pretty high-quality internationals, De Villiers. They've had Mornay Morkel for the Brisbane Heat.
Rashid Khan's obviously been
a stalwart as well. So they've had some reasonable names, the last obviously 2.5 years notwithstanding. But a shorter tournament might mean they're available for longer, which would be a big boon.
But 2020 cricket's real strength at the moment is even that sort of, if I can call them, the second tier of good players who are not the international players, are still really good players who bring people into the game. Mm-hmm. Put bums on seats is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Back to you.
Well, from Big Bash to Super Smash, we've got the climax of the tournament here in New Zealand. Lippy, I guess you've been pretty quiet so far as we've eulogised about Australia, England and the universe boss returning to T20 cricket as alongside Kevin Peterson, Jeffrey Boycott and some others as well. But yeah, what do we think from the Super Smash and the climax of the tournament, both women and men's here in New Zealand?
Well, I guess talking about a tournament where you'd like to add more international players, Super Smash is one where we haven't had any international players. I think largely, again, because of the fact that borders, you know, makes it pretty much impossible here for New Zealand, but also the fact that we're competing with the Big Bash, you're just never going to attract the names, and I'm sure that the money on offer isn't anywhere near that. But look, I think it's been a much more entertaining competition than the Big Bash, and I also think that they play the 10 games, and I also think that, you know, the fact that it's been over that period of time, every game has just seemed like it's been relevant. And yeah, I've just absolutely loved the tournament. But, you know, then you flip it around, those two finals, they weren't exactly the greatest entertainment for the sport, because they were just won so comfortably by the two teams that we saw on offer with the Blaze and the Brave.
Yeah, a little bit of a disappointment in terms of the closeness of the finals, but it did turn out the way that we perhaps had thought that it might in terms of the Wellington Blaze and being particularly successful in the women's competition. The Blaze in particular were tremendously successful throughout this tournament, and I think you touched on it prior to the final in terms of them being an almost unbackable favourite, and certainly in multi-betting they were our anchor to go through and win that tournament. Has their ongoing and continued success been a positive thing for the women's Super Smash, or has it been a little bit detrimental to the kind of health of that competition, do you think?
It's hard to know, because I think you have to preface that first by saying that they lost last year. Canterbury was very strong last year, pushed them all the way, challenged them in lots of different games. It wasn't just, you know, they didn't last year. This season they've gone through unbeaten and almost unchallenged. Canterbury was, I think, surprising that they weren't as strong. They did lose Kate Ibrahim down to the Sparks, and the Sparks have been very, very good, bouncing back from a year where they've had pretty much no success to coming in and finishing second in that final. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard to know, because those two, sometimes when you have a big team that everyone wants to chase, it's that driver. And, you know, when we talked to Frankie Mackay, I think, you know, it must have been a year, 18 months ago now, she was kind of saying that, yes, you look to Wellington and you just wanted to beat them, and that kind of drove the Magicians and perhaps, you know, drove them that year to really succeed well. But on the flip side of that, it really, yeah. I said, I think last week, that the men's competition, I didn't know who was going to win in those three, out of those three teams. You know, I thought it might be a Wellington double. That proved quite wrong in the men's competition. But it was almost, as soon as Susie Bates was dismissed in that final, you just kind of thought, okay, like that, the Sparks just have no chance here. And I mean, even the fact that Sophie Devine scored 90 and got the Blaze up to a big total. Yes, it was going to need a Susie Bates special to kind of win them that game. And as soon as she was dismissed early, it meant that the enjoyment factor, I suppose, from a neutral point of view, was taken out of it a bit.
Yeah, it's super difficult, isn't it? Because when you've got an established tournament, an established group of teams that play in that tournament, so, you know, you use the footballing analogy, you've got the Premier League, and over the course of the last 20 years, you know, Premier League, I think, started in 1992, you've had five or six teams that have dominated that. And the reason they've dominated it isn't because necessarily they've had the money, although some of those clubs have, but it's also because they've got the infrastructure to continue to produce players of quality. You know, you look at that Manchester United Academy, and, you know, the likes of the fact that you've got a David Beckham, a Gary Neville, a Ryan Giggs, they produce quality players. Phil Neville as well. Interestingly, they're both bloody handy cricketers, and I think Phil Neville, in fact, still holds a Lancashire League record with Matt Hayden for an opening batting partnership for a club side. But anyway, we digress. But my point really being here that this is about the domestic tournament that is focused around the provinces. And you are going to have a situation where a province has a number of players that come through over a number of years, and they have a period of dominance for, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever it is. And that's where I think from a T20 perspective, the franchise system really, really works in terms of being able to say you can only have four of the international players, or you can only have two overseas players, and you actually have to really make that system work. So I don't know why everyone's laughing at me as I go on this particular rant, but look, I think you are going to, you know, have those situations where there's a period of dominance. But I think, you know, as you say, I think from a perspective of you know, Wellington's dominance throughout the course of the competition, you know, we've put it on our multi. It was an absolute lock throughout the course of the season, and they, you know, deserved in terms of their success.
Absolutely, they deserve all the success, and I think we do have to celebrate that they were just absolutely tremendous throughout the tournament. And let's hope all those players can carry it on over the next couple of months.
We were laughing at you because you almost poked my eyes out while you were
gesticulating wildly.
There, yeah. just going back to the men's competition there and how that ended, we were lucky enough, or unlucky enough, however you want to look at it, to have the Black Caps and the national side players back in the tournament. They had a massive impact. What did you make of them and how it affected the competition?
Yeah, they did. You're right. I will talk about some of the unheralded players a bit later, because I still think that they did play a massive part in the Brave, in particular, their success throughout the season. But yeah, look, you know, you look to that final and Mitchell Santner, geez, he showed his class. Funnily enough, him and Sophie Devine both scored 92, kind of match turning performances. You know, Indy's innings sort of could have gone either way. Indy were brave, I guess, in their decision to set their lineup, and actually picked a lot of bowling options, and Santner pushed up the order. He talked about in the conversation that he had after his innings, talked about how he really relished that responsibility, and he scored runs in their last round robin game that kind of got them into the first place and got them that week, or that week off, or whatever, however many days it was. But yeah, look, it was funny innings, because he kept swinging the bat, and you'd think, oh, he's cloth that, like he hasn't got any of that at all, and then it would just fly over the ropes for six. And yeah, he just kept going, and you know, what actually impressed me the most from him was he was ragging it when he was bowling. And, you know, he only picked up one wicket. It was a crucial wicket of Cam Fletcher in the end. But, yeah, look, there's been a couple of games this year and the last sort of 3 months or so where I've seen Santner that he started to spin the ball a lot more. And, look, if he can add that to the accuracy that he's got, if he can bring that on a regular basis, that's going to be huge. But
And you're saying you wanted to talk about some of the more unheralded players. I'll come to you first, Border. You were talking to me this afternoon a lot about Courtney Clark and how much he impressed you.
This is a scouting report, is it? Someone that's picked in the final to open the batting?
Everyone already knows about him. 21-year-old. Look, he's impressed me this season.
22, I believe. I think they keep saying he was 21 in the
22
commentary.
22 years and 131 days.
But I believe
days.
He's 22.
There you go. It was weird.
Yeah, carry on, Baldy.
I was going to say, he's impressed me this season, and he showed it in the final. 71 off 34 on a big stage. Young fella came out and dominated a pretty fancy Canterbury attack. You know, it had Matt Henry, it had Nuttall, it had guys that have been successful, it had Daryl Mitchell, you know, Todd Astle, very experienced cricketer. He dominated those guys and set up a victory for his team. So, look, I think there's a lot to like. As you mentioned, Raj, in our conversation, there's a lot of players in that Black Cap side who are pretty well established across all of those different formats. It's going to be a tough couple of years for him to break into that national setup, but he looks like he's got a real future.
Yeah, look, there were a lot of guys that I thought stepped up in that tournament. I mean, you know, we just mentioned Cam Fletcher. We've mentioned him a few times. And I actually think, let's just talk about him for a second and that, you know, go look back to that semi-final. And, you know, I was trying to push for Wellington. I was trying to say, look, Devin Conway's going to step up in these big games. And he actually did. He scored runs. Michael Bracewell is another who's really stepped up in this tournament, who's someone who's kind of was touted from an early age to be someone that was going to push for higher honours, and it hasn't really happened for him yet. But look, he had a big season in this and finished top run scorer in the men's charts. But yeah, look, Cam Fletcher just came in and changed that game, 60-odd off 35 balls, and it's a role that he's played throughout the season for Canterbury. There's been quite a few games in their whole campaign where it could have gone wrong for them, you know, and he just came in and won them the game and got them across the line. And yeah, it's becoming a specialty of his. And, you know, even I think in that, you talk about finishes and it being such an important role. And yeah, look, if he can establish himself in that role, it's going to be a great opportunity for him to push for higher honours, because that's probably one of the roles that we don't necessarily have in that Black Cap side. We've seen Jimmy Neesham sort of play that role a little bit, but you know, if Tim Seifert is going to be falling out of the, you know, the keeping spot in New Zealand, although he did finish the season strong, then you know, Fletcher has got an opportunity to push for things there.
We've talked about it a little bit there in terms of the guys that might be pushing for higher honours. Anyone else that's really caught the eye throughout the course of this tournament that might, you know, get on the plane to that World Cup, T20 World Cup?
I don't know if there are that many that are pushing for the plane. I, like you guys just said, I think there are a lot of really settled players in that squad, and, you know, there would have to be a few players really fall out of form or kind of get injured or something to not make the plane. But I do think that there were certainly some impressive performers. Someone like Henry Shipley really stood up for Canterbury. He was finished at 18 wickets. I think that was top wicket taker for the men's competition, and really did a great job. Even in that final, when the runs were flowing, he was the only one that could kind of come in and bowl solid overs. He's someone, when he runs in and bowls, he's really another really tall person. I mean, we talked about Joel Garner. He's not quite on that level, but he's tall, and it doesn't look like he's bowling at a huge pace, but just someone that really seems to challenge batters, and they find it hard to get away. Contributed really well with the bat. And then you look on the Brave side. I said it before, there's been a lot of players in that lineup. It's been a really impressive campaign for them, because the fact that they've had guys that, it's been a different player every single game almost that stepped up. We've touched on someone like De Gronholm, who's really had a couple of big games. Santner had this big push to the finish. You had Seifert in a couple of games. But actually, sort of some people like Joe Walker and Anurag Verma, who actually both ended up playing in that final. I wasn't sure if Verma would play. I think if Trent Bolt had been available, then Verma might have been the one to miss out. You never know. But I think those two, Walker especially, after he ragged one through the gate yesterday, really sort of endears himself to me, anyone that can do that. But you know, both of those two I think have been really integral in what ND have done. And you know, I guess it's performances like that, you know, I think in New Zealand you only need a year or two like that, and suddenly you are pushing for higher honours. And the amount of cricket that goes on, it doesn't take a hugely sustained period of time to put yourself in lights. Look, I've probably done my dash probably on the Super Smash. Yeah, big congrats again for the Blaze and the Brave on, I think you guys said it, it's two sides that deserved to lift those trophies. So very well done for both of them. But look, we should go over to the West Indies again. And I must say, I haven't seen a huge amount of that series. But firstly, Binksy, Raj, can you guys tell me a bit about that Rovman Powell innings? I mean, that seemed like an impressive performance. Was that, I don't actually know anything about him at all as a cricketer. Did he come in and smash it? How was that innings?
Yeah, look, I think I didn't know a lot about Rovman Powell before this innings, if I'm brutally honest, but brutal would be the word that I would use. He started really, really well against the spinners, what I really liked. And I didn't actually realise this, and I don't know whether it's true, but there's a directive, I think, given to England cricketers that they must wear a helmet when they're batting, whether it's against seam or against spin. Rovman Powell came out to the spinners in his West Indies cap and absolutely marmalised it to all parts. 107 off 53 balls. Just the 10 sixes in that innings.
Oh, you're just
striking at 202. And look, made the ground look tiny. And I've got to be honest, I don't think England bowled particularly well at him, offered him a little bit of width at times. And also, I think, you know, what you actually got to look at is this game had 220 played 204. So, you know, a pretty decent amount of runs, and England came just a little bit short in terms of their chase. But look, fantastic innings, and look, a really nicely poised series now at 2-2. I think the other thing that's been brilliant to watch is five games at the same ground. There's been a little bit of interest around that because they've played on different pitches and they've played on a used pitch a couple of times. The boundary sizes have varied a little bit. The wind has come into the equation. It's been really, really interesting to watch this T20 series unfold. I think the other thing that I would just point out, and this is not England Binksy making excuses, but England have got a relatively mixed side in terms of the people that are there. They're giving opportunities to people like Tom Banton, Phil Salt, Harry Brook, George Garton, Tymar Mills, Rhys Topley, who's not played a massive amount of cricket, as well as some of the established guys like Chris Jordan and Moeen Ali and Jason Roy, who we know pretty well. So, look, it's been a fantastic series to watch. There's been a lot of interest. And we've talked a lot about the West Indies over the course of the last 6 months on the podcast. Really, really good to see some of these guys like Romario Shepherd, Fabian Allen, Akil Hussain coming through and joining the likes of Kieran Pollard and some of the more established players. But it's been a fantastic series to watch, and fans in the ground as well, which has been really good, Raj.
Yeah, I just wanted to pick up on the Rovman Powell stuff and more around his selection, because I don't know if you heard Kieran Pollard's comments after the game. He was quite, I don't want to use the word aggressive, but emphatic that, you know, it's great to see him, you know, fulfilling his potential and, you know, repaying the faith in selecting him. Because as we've seen, you know, since the 2020 World Cup a few months ago, there has been a lot of questions around the selections that new West Indian panel is making. And they're giving guys a go. And it's good to see someone like this and Shepherd as well and the others sort of stepping up and showing that there is a bit of depth to West Indies cricket, especially with the white ball. So that's kind of just what I wanted to highlight there around Powell.
And we always finish, we always have some sort of level of prediction. This show is going to come out, and I think the next T20, we're recording this on a Sunday night. And
tomorrow.
Yeah, it's tomorrow morning, and we always have kind of a little bit, we've got a bit of a lag. We just released our Hall of Fame episode this morning, so we'll give you a bit of break and release this one midweek sometime. So look, lads, prediction, Raj and Binksy, probably you two have watched the series closely enough. Who's going to take it out?
Yeah, I think the West Indies win it. They'll score 200 batting first, and England will fall apart all out 120.
Yeah, look, couldn't agree more. look, the good thing is in the post-match press conference, Kieran Pollard mentioned that they would be playing in the middle of the square, so that the boundaries were going to be even. We've had a couple of games where it's been a case of there's been one short boundary. I am going to say that England are actually going to take the thing that Raj values the most in cricket, which is the big Mo, momentum. And they're going to take their win from this morning into tomorrow. We're going to see Phil Salt, who came in, played really, really well in game three, 50 runs, came in today and just hit his first ball up in the air, got caught. I think he's going to play again tomorrow. I think he's going to get their bowling correct. Their spinners today were absolutely superb. Lippy, I don't know whether you saw the game, but...
I didn't, but I've heard about Moeen Ali.
Mate, not even Moeen Ali. So you want to see Rothman Powell came in. There was a buzz in the ground and Rashid's bowled him a wrong and that he's just not picked and bowled him through the gate. Mate, you honestly, you would have had to have a little sit down. You'd have been that excited. look, he bowled really, really well. So look, I hope my compatriots take it out tomorrow. But I have to say, it's been a fantastic series. The hitting has been, I would not want to be a bowler in Bridgetown, Barbados. And I also wouldn't want to be Kookaburra because they've needed to supply a hell of a lot of cricket balls to that series so far as well.
Just before we wrap up the pod, we just probably should touch on the crescendo that is the Under-19 World Cup and a couple of surprising results, at least for me, given the quality that that Sri Lanka put together in the group stages, beating Australia in the group stages. They've gone out of the tournament at the quarterfinal stage. They'll still play for fifth and sixth place and so forth over the next few days. But the real surprise packet has been Afghanistan reaching the semi-finals. They won their quarterfinal against Sri Lanka, beat them reasonably comprehensively to book a place against England, Adam, in the semi-final number one. And then, of course, the big showdown, Australia versus India in semi-final number two. So there's a possibility that Afghanistan, if they beat England, well, there's a certainty if they beat England, but they're a chance to play in the final of the Under-19 World Cup, which is a great thing for Afghanistan cricket moving forward because they've been reliant on their spinners, their experienced spinners, for so long now. It's wonderful to see young cricketers coming up and sort of following in that tradition. So fantastic for Afghanistan cricket, reasonably close to Adam's and my heart this season, particularly at club level. So fantastic to see their national side, their Under-19 side doing so well. Good luck to them.
Bordy, couldn't agree more. I'm not going to get on the jingoistic train that England have won their three games in their group stage so far and should be favourites for the tournament. But no, look, it's been fantastic to see them play. And look, every bit of the Under-19 World Cup that I've seen on the TV, it's been great just to see there's a level of, I don't know what it is. It's sort of enthusiasm, naivety.
Youthful exuberance, isn't it?
Youthful exuberance, yeah, I think would be a good description. It's been fantastic to watch in a time where all of us are worrying about whether or not we need to sanitise our desk and, you know, wipe our keyboard down with a bit of antibacterial wipe. So, look, it's been absolutely fantastic to see that level of joviality on the TV. But that does wrap up another episode of the Top Order podcast. It's great to be recording, particularly with so much cricket going on around the world at the moment. But if you do want to dip into the back catalogue, please do so. We've got some awesome stuff that's been recently released, not least our Hall of Fame, where we talk about Pat Cummins somehow in the top 60 of world cricketers after just 38 test matches and severe injuries left, right and centre, and still not a New Zealander in sight. But you do dip into the back catalogue, listen to a little bit of the Hall of Fame, listen to This Week in Cricket from last week, which is still pretty relevant, and we'll be back in your feed next week to talk about the result of the ICC Under-19 World Cup. We'll talk about England in the West Indies and a whole host more. Good night. God bless. See you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say. Your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.